Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Welcome to the Badass Women's Hour podcast. This is where we round up all the best bits from our live Saturday night show on Talk Radio. And this week, Natalie and Harriet were away, but I was joined by the amazing legend that is Trisha, and also Deborah James, aka Bow Babe and Sun columnist. We were talking the news, we're obviously celebrating England's win, we were talking about cosmetic surgery and Love Island, and 70 years of the NHS. Plus, can entrepreneurship be a force for good? All that coming up next on the Badass Women's Hour podcast.
One, two, three, four!
But first up, well, there's two big things to celebrate today. So first of all is Pride. Pride is happening in London today. It's been amazing. I've seen all the letterboxes have all been painted in rainbows, and there just seems to be a really fun vibe. And then, of course, we won the football today. You know, which is a great celebration. But equally, we've already been trolled on Twitter for mentioning this. We wanted to talk about the fact that there is a problem with domestic violence with football. So whether we win or we lose, domestic violence rates go up. And both of the two of you said that on your journey here, what did you notice, Trisha, on your journey here in terms of, because the match had literally just finished, right?
It had just finished. It was really scary. Well, because of Pride, there were, you know, no roads open. So I had to, finally, I flagged down a cab. And while in the cab, every time we stopped, there would be very excitable, and it was intimidating, football supporters rattling the doors of the cab, trying to get in, shouting, swearing at the cab driver when he wouldn't let them in the already occupied cab. And I thought, oh my God, it's already started. And going home tonight, I'm worried about past pubs. Yeah, I am.
I think we're going to be asking that question, aren't we? In terms of, should we put it out there in terms of the question that we're going to be asking
tonight?
Yeah, that's
a good question.
So have you guys witnessed aggressive behaviour during the World Cup? And we want to hear your views on it, don't we? So please tweet us here at Talk Radio and Badass Women's Hour. I had exactly the same in terms of the journey here. So I got a kind of almost a taxi all the way across London. And the closer into London I got, the more vibrant, I suppose, the atmosphere became. However, there's loads and loads of sirens going on out there. I've seen, I saw two fights in the space of 4 to 5 minute journey.
And you wait till later on tonight when there's more alcohol around.
With a lot of police around. And that's not people kind of, everybody is happy and rightly so. Let's hope. I think it's we haven't got this far in 28 years, have we, in terms of, my son was like, what do you mean? I've got a 10-year-old son. And he was like, isn't England always like this? And I was like, no, this is not normal. But yeah, I do worry a little bit, actually, because there is a lot of alcohol. And don't get me wrong, we all like a glass of wine, but there is some interesting behaviour. And that was at 5 o'clock today.
Yeah, and there's been this research into the link, and there's been a big campaign recently about it from the National Centre of Domestic Violence. And they basically looked at when England lost a game, the domestic violence rose by 38%. You know, so I think, like, much as, you know, you can go, oh, this is a big celebration, like, this is not a stat you want to be seeing on a day which should be celebrated.
But that's when they lose a game. So we won today. What can we expect?
I think it's 26%. So it does still rise.
Doesn't matter if we win or lose.
Domestic violence goes up after an England game.
Now, do you think that's linked to alcohol, though?
Oh gosh, it's got to
I don't know. Is it just excitement? Is it charge? Is it, you know, people are just charged up and excited?
Because I was thinking, I wonder if there's also a link to gambling in case people have lost money.
Right, okay.
You know, I was wondering
I think as well there's gambling. There are lots of other things. There's also that kind of this sounds very un-PC to say, but Condoleezza Rice was somebody who brought this up. Because of the advancement, albeit slow advancement of women's rights and their presence, I think increasingly when men, primarily men, get together, it becomes even more of a macho thing than maybe it was before. Because, you know, we'll talk about it a bit later, Dr. Pippa Grange, the psychological coach for the England team, who's done an amazing job working on with psychometric tests and help for the team. And reading online what people are saying about her has taken me back to the early 70s when I remember that kind of language was commonplace and people are currently in court for it.
We'll talk about Pippa a bit later, but I think what it leads quite nicely on is the story that I've seen this week about Gareth Southgate, who's got a very different approach to being the England manager. And what people are saying is now that he is going to become a bit of a beacon for a new type of masculinity.
Yep.
Just the way that he's been training and talking about the guy. Have you noticed anything different about his approach this year, do you think, in terms of managing the team?
He's very calm, isn't he? So I view him as an incredibly, he's a bit of a swan. I could be wrong, but you know what
paddling
under, you know, all the cogs are turning and actually everything on the surface is under control.
Yeah. And he wears waistcoats.
But also, absolutely. Did you notice the game the other week when they went to penalties? Now, normally they're being reprimanded and shouted at by the English coach, you know, traditionally. And he was just, they did the subtitle showing what he was saying to the team. And he was saying things like, keep calm, you've got this. Like, it was all sort of positive affirmations.
And that's all part of the training as well that this Pip has done. But also the other thing I think is that since we've had him there have been players talking about their mental health and well-being.
Rio Ferdinand came out with that whole show.
Absolutely. Yeah. I was in floods of tears.
It's not seen as weakness. It isn't weakness.
No.
Mental health problems are, you know, one in four of us at any time in our lives will have a mental health problem we need help for. Mm. That's a conservative estimate. It is a strength to be able to admit it. And sadly, there's so much stigma people can't. So football players being able to do that and being encouraged to do that is a fantastic beacon. Remember, young men are more likely to die at their own hand than accidents, illness, everything together.
Yeah.
So something like a football manager encouraging his team to be open about mental health, for me, is amazing.
Suicide is actually the leading cause of under 25, isn't it?
Yes.
Of young men. I absolutely agree. I think it's I cried the way my way through that Rio Ferdinand programme.
Yeah, it was phenomenal.
It was absolutely.
But won't it be really interesting if, you know, England are doing so well, you know, if they actually won based on this kind of new approach,
yep.
I wonder what sort of impact that's going to have for somebody to almost have a bit more of a progressive approach, working with psychologists like, what was her name, Pippa?
Dr. Pippa Grange.
Pippa Grange.
Yeah, well, I hope so. You know, it's interesting what you're saying about Gareth having a new approach. Let's remember that his squad is the age, you know, they're all, what, under 25?
Yeah.
It is a new generation of male. And I think a lot of the horrible things that have come out about seeing it as wussy is probably from older males who can't understand this new approach. And them winning, they're going to have to sit up and watch. So it's going to be really interesting.
Yeah, it is a completely new approach to it, isn't it?
Yeah, and funny enough, the last time England, I believe, did really well, which possibly 28 years ago, 26 years ago, I think. I believe that this kind of mindset approach was used actually with the England manager at the time, and it was changing the mindset, and it was looking at, right, boys, how are we going to use kind of a bit of a growth mindset? How are we going to work together to, we've got the physical ability here. We know that I've trained you, you know, through and through. We know that we can do this. It's doing it on the day, isn't it? And that is about mindset, and it's about mindset.
Absolutely.
Under pressure. And we can't dismiss that. And you know what? Those boys nailed penalties the other day.
I know.
And clearly, yeah. You know, it's worked again today. So, you know, hats off.
Yes.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, we'll see what's happening. But I also wonder what the impact might be if we start leading with that different mindset, whether we are still going to have this aggression, this intimidation that you've experienced on the way here. So we're going to talk about the NHS, because this week it's their 70 years since NHS started. And I've seen loads of things on my socials and people, you know, posting and celebrating the NHS. And I actually sat and thought to myself how many times I have needed them in my lifetime. And when you actually think about it and how much they've helped you, it is such an incredible thing that we've got here. Yeah. Trisha, tell us about what are you doing to sort of celebrate the NHS? Or, you know, I mean, you've had breast cancer, you've had a lot of treatment through them.
I couldn't use the NHS because unfortunately publicity meant they couldn't guarantee my safety, and it would have taken too many resources to. It's one of the reasons I moved overseas, because of the way I was stalked when I was going through treatment. Nothing was off limits, even in a private hospital with security. But both my parents worked for the NHS, and my younger daughter Maddie is also going to work for the NHS. We both took part in the march that Donald Trump kind of got confused why we're doing it. He thought we were marching against it. We were marching against further cuts to the NHS. I'm a huge NHS fan. Living in the States, I have girlfriends who've been through breast cancer, and their treatment. Remember, if you've had anything, an illness with insurance, you can't claim on that again. So their treatment will be often tailored to their insurance program. One friend of mine didn't have radiotherapy. Her cancer came back, no insurance. You've done it once. And the costs, the extra costs, and every bit of soap, everything like that. So people in the States, by and large, have completely the wrong idea about what the National Health Service is. But every time I come back here, I'm just so thankful for it. I mean, it's been the lifeblood of my family from a professional point of view.
Yeah. And Deborah, you write a column for The Sun, don't you?
Yeah, I do. I wrote about it this week. So I think it's the NHS is an amazing thing. But I also think that we are the first to criticise it. And it is failing at the moment. Well, not across the board, but we're failing to meet targets. And yes, we've got a crisis in funding as well. Mm. And that needs to be solved. But money isn't actually the only kind of solution. And it's amazing when you start looking at the stats. And because I was writing in the column this week, I was looking at kind of some of the way the funding is used in the NHS. And I'm just going to kind of throw out a few, what I think are quite alarming stats, actually. So 9% of the NHS budget is actually, which is worth about £8.8 billion, which is more than we spend on the police and the fire service, is actually taken up by diabetes. Now, this isn't type 1 diabetes, so it's not the kind of one that is actually, my cousin has that, where you actually need to inject every day. Mm-hmm. It's very diet related, and 9 out of 10...
Is that type 2
diabetes? It's type 2, and 9 out of 10 type 2 diabetes is caused by diet related, so essentially obesity. And that is taking up 9% of our budget. On top of that, around 40% of diseases that are treated within the NHS are actually from preventable causes. Now, preventable causes are things such as exercise, as diet, so not having, and smoking. Mm-hmm. And these then lead to cancers. Now, I have bowel cancer. Mine wasn't anything to do with my lifestyle. However, 4 in 10 cancers are to do with lifestyle choices.
4 in 10?
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate that the vast majority of people might be sitting there on the other side of the fence. I know, like Trish and myself, who whose cancers were not derived from anything that we did. But at the same time, there is a proven link. And, I was the vegetarian that got bowel cancer. Yeah, however...
I did work. When I worked as a stewardess in the old days, it was in the aircraft where they now know that radiation was a lot stronger.
Oh, that's interesting.
And also they smoked. On aircraft.
And they smoke, yeah.
They smoked as well, and I was doing shift work.
Absolutely.
And so, I can see the minuses.
But don't you think we have a bit of a mindset of, if you have a problem, you go immediately to the doctor, and the doctor gives you some sort of drugs for it. I don't think we have a culture of
preventative, or even
that deep understanding of, you know, diet and nutrition. I know when my dad got diagnosed with prostate cancer, one of the first things I did was get him to see a nutritionist. But I think he was skeptical because he was like, but my doctor's told me that I'm eating healthily and, you know, I'm doing all this stuff. And the nutritionist was really interesting because she said, it's not just about what you eat, but you've got to really look at how you detoxify your liver to cope with the drugs. And I'd never even thought about
when you're going through treatment. Yeah, yeah,
because but your doctor's not telling you that. The nutritionist was telling him that.
And it's not just about kind of how we treat things, it's about awareness as well. So I know bowel cancer kind of awareness is very low, but in terms of there was a report actually out recently by the EVA pill, which looks at all types of gynecological cancers and womb cancer. We only 2 in 5 women actually know any signs or symptoms of womb cancer. As a result, there's actually a really good resource that the EVA pill have put out this week, kind of highlighting to women what those symptoms are that we should be looking for. But that's quite worrying because actually it costs the NHS far less when diseases are picked up in early stage than at late stage. So actually, I think it's time that we start taking a little bit of responsibility for our own health, you know, and say, right, yeah, we need to get a system that is working, but we also need to start doing stuff to look after ourselves.
Absolutely.
And exercise is huge.
You've also got to be careful because in the state, people are looking out because of the insurance costs and the payout. But when I say people are looking out for it, it's all the snake oil people who will
tell you, do this, do that.
But do you think, because you have to pay for your medical care, do you think the state does have a bit more of an attitude? Do you feel that people are a little bit more like, I'm going to try and help myself and be preventative?
Yes and no, because often poverty comes into it. Bad diet is financially controlled, and distances as well, which we don't actually have in the UK. That's a big difference. I mean, you can drive, when I used to go to my house in Maine, you can drive on a 5-lane road for 2 hours and not see another person. There are huge distances to shops and what have you in rural America. We don't really have that here. We have much easier access to good food here. Although people might disagree with me, and trust me, it is a lot easier here than it is in the States to get to a doctor. I had a sore throat. To go to see a doctor, I had to fill out all these forms. I had to pay up front. She told me what I knew. But, you know, having had cancer, you're told every time you go to the doctor's, scream, I've had cancer. Yeah.
And I think on the opposite end of the scale, the thing that really frustrates me is I know that there are life-saving drugs that are not currently funded on the NHS. Because our resources are being used elsewhere. And let's face it, you know, there's not an unlimited amount of money going around. So what I'd be fighting for is when you really need the, you know, when you really need the help, we need to be putting our resources into there. And actually the stuff that we can do to support and look after the NHS, because it is incredible, but we need to develop a system that is going to work with us for the future, and is not fit for purpose at the moment. Yeah. So let's look after it.
Yeah, definitely.
Let's get behind it. Mm.
And are there any other things that you did, Tricia, in terms of your treatment going through breast cancer, in terms of that you changed that wasn't necessarily advice by the NHS, but it was things that you sought out to help yourself?
Oh, yes. I at the time, 10 years ago, I wanted to keep working. I wanted to keep running and keep working out, and the consensus was that one should sit still and be quiet, and I had to really fight to keep active. Things have changed now. Mm-hmm. This is changed quickly with breast cancer. This was 10 years ago, and I was told, people love to come up and tell you how many people they know who've died of cancer, but I had a lot of people try to scare me out of activity, but I had to keep working. I carried on working. I carried on running. No, I did not have a good time. I'm still suffering from the after effects of chemotherapy, and I've only just come off drugs after 10 years. But that kept me. I did that for my head, because I've had depression in the past, and I was terrified that the 2 operations and the treatment and all of that would drag me back there. So I ran for my head. And now, of course, that's embraced and encouraged because we know it helps women recover.
And there's a proven link to reduce anxiety and depression.
Yeah. Oh, I know that one.
Absolutely.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Badass Women's Hour XL on Talk Radio.
She'll get you talking.
Welcome back to the Badass Women's Hour XL here on Talk Radio. And I'm missing my usual co-hosts, Natalie Campbell and Harriet Minter, but I've upgraded both of them for these two legends. We've got Trisha Goddard, yes, the original Trisha.
The original
and also
Trisha.
Deborah James, a.k.a. Bow Babe, Sun columnist. Welcome, ladies.
Thank you. I love the fact that you were saying you have upgraded.
Totally upgraded.
Yes, I mean, when you get co-hosts weren't like that.
I was going to say, if they're tuning in, we're just keeping your seats warm.
We've been having some good chats, haven't we, about the NHS and about, you know, looking after ourselves a bit more, take that burden off the NHS. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, obviously celebrating the England win, but we also needed to talk about those domestic violence rates going up. And we've put a poll out on Twitter to see if anybody's experienced any like intimidating behaviour. Like you both did on your way here, didn't you? So it was quite feisty. The game had just finished.
It might get worse as the evening goes on as well.
Yeah, might do, mightn't it?
Hope not.
Yeah.
Hope not.
But leading on from our NHS chat, you know, normally you go to the NHS when you need surgery because you're unwell. But there's been lots of reports in the news this week about the Love Island contestants and the amount of cosmetic surgery that they have all had. Now, are you two watching Love Island? Not really?
No. Not, it's not my type of thing. I'm really sorry.
But you know that everybody's kind of very, well, I mean, aesthetically pleasing, but it depends on your type, really.
Not diverse.
But there's like a certain look.
Yeah, I've watched a few episodes and I wondered if it's actually possible to look like that. But then I realised something.
What's that?
Well, I realised that naturally, I don't think it is possible to look like that.
Well, don't, you know, I'll nail my colours to the mast. Don't get me started. Now, when I was a little girl at school, in the 60s, I was teased because of my big lips, my big bum, and all of those things. I was teased mercilessly. They used to say, oh, let's get Goddard's face and push her against the mirror so she'll stick on the window. Kiss the window and then you won't be able to move away. All of those things, and now people are paying to have their faces look like that. And the look is pure blow-up sex doll.
Well, there's been basically a call. One of the articles this week was about banning cosmetic surgery ads from Love Island because all the contestants on there have been having surgery. And like, so Megan, for instance, had 25 grand's worth of surgery from implants. She's had a bum lift, hasn't she?
Oh,
she's had fillers.
How old is she?
They're all like in their early
20s. Children.
Yeah. And what they're saying is, you know, then, you know, there's adverts that are all about cosmetic surgery. And, you know, this is just not a good thing. You know, there's a lot of people that watch that show.
I just, from the point of view of, and my girlfriends know about this one, boob jobs or breast implantations. When I was in hospital, I was in a private hospital, and apparently half the ward was women who'd had boot jobs and the other half were women who were having life-saving operations, like myself. And the nurses treat everyone the same, but they admitted they struggled with the fact that they had people who had come in for boob jobs screaming and crying for painkillers. And they said it's very funny that the women going through cancer who saw their operations as a lifesaver tended to be more stoic and be quieter. And the thing is, what happens once you've had a breast implant? Let me tell you, self-examination is hard enough already. The figures for breast cancer, do you really want to mess with that? Do you really want to mess with not being able to feel? And things like mammograms. And I, having been through it, I just don't understand why someone would say, you know what? Having said so, I've had fillers. I've had, when I went through chemo and I was on air, my face was collapsing in. I have a fantastic surgeon who's like a cranial surgeon who administers it only once a year. And I felt a cheat because I started having it done at 52. I'm now 60. I have minimal. It's like I'm in there and out in 10 minutes.
But I think that what we're seeing on Love Island is sort of, it's a one-dimensional aesthetic, right?
And they all look the same.
Yeah, and it is. And I see that a lot in society. And, you know, it's sort of, I mean, I'm sure it's kind of driven from your Kim Kardashians. Yeah. But yeah, the lip filler look, the boobs,
cheeks.
Just the way everybody looks. And I feel, you know, when you're watching something like Love Island, which is totally mainstream, you can't underestimate the power of lots of people watching that and it being influenced by that, sometimes even subconsciously.
Yeah, I've seen it firsthand. So in my previous life, I'm still really passionate. I was a deputy head teacher in a secondary school and spent 15 years working with teenagers. And the thing that I still to this day find amazing is the fact that the most highly intelligent women who are 16 to 18 are still incredibly interested. I'm not saying, you know, you can't be interested in your looks. I think actually you should take pride in the way that you look. And I do think boosting your confidence is one thing. However, believing that you have to live up to a stereotype is another. And as a result, I know 18-year-olds who have had Botox because they want to have Botox before they develop lines.
Does it prevent you getting lines? If you have Botox at that age, will that stop you from
aging?
There is some
suggestion that having early Botox does help. And my surgeon would tell you early Botox would be late 30s, early 40s, not 18.
20.
Do you know the best thing you can do to prevent wrinkles is use sunblock and stay out of the
I
sun.
Heard that. Yeah, boom. I heard that from a dermatologist. She was like, that is the number one anti-aging.
That's what I still wear, people say, oh, black don't crack. If I hear that once, I've heard it a million times. It's actually your genetics can only be a maximum of 20%. Lifestyle is 80%.
Really?
I come from a generation, my mother's generation, West Indian ladies wore big hats, long gloves. I wear sunblock every damn day. I don't go outside without a hat. I do not sunbathe. I do not do beaches. I run. I don't eat meat. What I have, I've earned. So when people tell me, oh, you're so lucky to look like that, I'm like, come be lucky with me for the next hour in the rain.
Yeah. The thing that's quite worrying is that when I start posting stuff on Instagram, I do a little bit of Instagramming, I have been contacted by a lot of companies offering me free Botox.
Really?
To sort out my line across my forehead. Now, I didn't really recognise that I had much of a line until they started pointing it out to me. And at first I was like, excuse me, no thank you. And now, and I'm a pretty confident person, and now I'm thinking, oh, clearly, you know, I've been contacted by a lot of companies, so now I'm thinking, I have a problem. And it's quite worrying.
No, what you have to think is, I have money.
No.
That's a different mindset.
That's a different mindset.
I have money because I've looked at pictures of you because we were doing selfies.
Yeah, of course.
She's one of these smolderers.
Yeah.
You would have to be in the business and enlarging the picture. Who can we play upon next in order to see that?
In order to see it. But it is quite worrying, isn't it? So if I'm being affected and I'm asking myself, do I need this? And I'm, you know, pretty okay in this area. I wonder how many other people are then actually going ahead with it as a result.
So do you think we should be banning the adverts then between Love Island? Or do you think we should even be banning contestants on shows like this from having any like cosmetic surgery?
Be real. And I think if we can regulate the sorts of foods we put into children's programs because they're not good for them, then why can't we regulate? It's like with alcohol and what have you.
Yeah.
There's a health side to it. Would you ever get anything done, Emma?
Do you know what? No, I have a real problem. I have a real problem with the term anti-aging because I'm like, I am aging. And like, it's my birthday next week, actually. I'm 42 next week.
Oh, small child.
And I feel absolutely privileged. One, that I'm still here at the age of 42. Yeah. Yeah. Two, that I am fit and healthy. And for me, I don't know, I really struggle to have anything done to my body that is not for medical purposes. Because I just can't understand going under a general anaesthetic for something cosmetic.
Risking your life.
Yeah, I feel like there's going to be times in my life where I need to, you know, so yeah.
What do you mean anti-aging though? What do you mean?
It's the term anti-aging because it just doesn't make any sense. How can you be anti-aging? We are aging. Every day we're aging.
I'm not.
How can you go back into
just getting younger?
It's just a fallacy. I'm all for like, you know, getting good, you know, I'll spend money on skin creams to improve, you know, the appearance of my skin, but I really want to embrace
aging. You don't want invasive.
No. And also, I just kind of feel like when you see people who've had it, it's addictive. It gets quite extreme. And then I don't think you look younger. You just look a bit weird.
But you do look old. You know, where I live in the States, there's a lot of women who have it done and they all look the same. And it is aging.
Yeah.
It is aging because, you know, once you see that stretched face look, you know, You're old. Yeah. You're old. You're trying to look young.
Yeah.
You know, and here's the other thing. They have all of that work done, but they still move like old people.
Keep fit. Exercise.
Joan Collins moves like a teenager.
But to me, it's just adding into like society that tells women our worth is based on how we look, but not just how we look, but on how young we look. And I feel like by taking part in this cosmetic surgery, we're almost perpetuating that. And we're almost saying, actually, do you know what? We're not enough just to be ourselves and to age like normal people age. And also, it's never ending. So some of my friends have had Botox. I'm like, well, how long does it last? They're like, oh, about 3 months. And
I only have it every year because it's done subtly. But it's not all, I mean, the stuff that we're talking about on Love Island, that's not about age, though, is it? That's about a sex doll. Look,
it's an aesthetic, isn't it?
Well, monkeys have, you know, why we wear lipstick, because monkeys' bottoms.
Monkeys' bottoms, the red.
So everybody wants their lips to look like, you know, a blow-up doll. One of my daughters said, "Mum, I've got no bust." Years and years ago, and I used to say to her, "You know, you're so lucky because you can wear Ralph Lauren couture." I mean, she's going to work with the NHS; she'll never be able to afford it. But you know, she saw me naked my kids saw me naked in the bath all the time, so they could see this inverted commas aging happening. I don't think many young women today see another nude woman unless it's in a sexual context. Do they see their mums, their aunts, like in Middle Eastern societies and societies where they all bathe together? You see granny's body and they're normal.
You don't see enough of real life. And especially with social media, everything that you're seeing has been edited and filtered. And, you know, you can't underestimate how much that influences you in terms of just always seeing perfection or, you know.
You won't see that on my Instagram. I don't care.
Yeah.
I don't care. Well, I do. But I don't. I don't want to be that phony.
No, but it is hard as a woman, I think, when you have been told your whole life that your value is based on how you look. Yep. And, you know, like you say, Deborah, when somebody's, you know, contacting you on Twitter and pointing out, because like you were talking to me and you were telling me about this line and I wasn't even looking at it.
I bet you are now.
No, but yes, I was. Only because, you know.
Only because I pointed it out. But it does play on your confidence. And I think there is a big thing in terms of actually where is the line between building up your confidence and actually, you know, playing the part, not playing the part, but, you know, making yourself feel nice, actually. And beauty treatments and spas, absolutely, you know, go for it, actually. You know, if it boosts, it's relaxing, but also if it boosts the way that you feel about yourself, then I am all for that.
Where's the line? Because somebody might say, actually, having fillers in my lips or having Botox makes me feel good about myself, makes me feel confident. Yeah.
Here's the thing, it's how we bring up our daughters, isn't it? If you, I tried to tell my daughters, I always told my daughters, looks fade, personalities and intelligence endure. So there's always the girl at school. How many times have you heard the reunion, the Miss Homecoming prom queen, and they get together 40 years later and she's some drab. We all get old, lovey. It doesn't matter what you do.
Yeah.
So concentrate on what's in your head and in your... I know it sounds corny, but in we remember good people a lot longer than we remember pretty people. We remember pretty people back in the day.
There's always another pretty person. Do you know what I mean?
It
doesn't matter what work you do to yourself. There is always going to be like it's a bit of a battle, isn't it?
And you're still going to get old.
Yeah.
Prettiest person in the cemetery.
Yeah. I think it's okay as long as you are very open about it. And I think as long as there is transparency in terms of actually, hang on a moment, I look like this because I have 3 filters, 12 rounds of Botox, and this is the result. I don't look like this because I was born like this.
They never say that, though.
But I think they should, because I think there is a misconception in terms of especially young women coming through that they have to look like that. And actually, what they need to recognise is if they really want to look like that, then it doesn't just happen. And there's all these, well, let's call it maintenance and money that is thrown into it. And I think as long as there is transparency over that, it makes it a little bit safer in terms of mindset for young women.
There's a transparency, but still, if you're seeing everybody with with the Kim Kardashian bomb, even though you know that they've probably paid for it,
I didn't pay,
doesn't necessarily
mine.
Stop you.
I hated it as a kid. I hated it. I hated my lips. I mean, you know, I consider myself now in retrospect lucky, because I grew up in a world where I was the only child of colour and I could not rely on my looks because I was not considered attractive purely because of my skin colour. And that still happens for a lot of young women from various ethnic groups. So in a way, we're lucky that there is still a conformity to do with other things, but... Yeah, no, I hated that, my big lips. So why people are paying to have them done, I don't know.
Yeah, it's interesting how the aesthetics changes, doesn't it, over the years.
Sad thing is, we still, you know, I'm not a fan of Love Island, but most people are.
Yeah, it's true.
And it's quite sad, isn't it? Sad's probably the wrong word. It's just slightly disconcerting that actually, despite the fact that we sit here and criticise that look, it makes good entertainment. So therefore, we all kind of have an opinion about it and we're all engaged by it. And then it fuels it even more.
Badass Women's Hour XL on Talk Radio.
She'll get you talking.
So on this show, we like to talk a lot about entrepreneurship. You know, a lot of our listeners and people in our kind of the Badass network are all setting up their own businesses. And I think there's a big kind of trend for entrepreneurship. And we're lucky enough to be joined by a total badass, which is Namishka Brambat. Sorry, I knew I was going to say
totally
that wrong.
Get my story.
And you are an advisor and consultant entrepreneur. Tell us a bit about you and what you do.
Sure. So by profession, I'm a management consultant and strategist. So I spend a lot of time working with clients to help enable change in their business at a corporate level. But over the last 3 years, I've been doing a lot of work with young entrepreneurs or up-and-coming entrepreneurs, especially around helping them enable their ideas. So I think when I kind of came into this world of entrepreneurship about 4 years ago, there was a lot in the online space on how do you start a business, how do you do it successfully. But where I saw a gap was actually helping entrepreneurs leverage their ideas. So it's one thing to teach somebody just how to start a business, but I think it's another thing to really enable them to create or impact change just by helping them understand exactly how their talent or genius could be leveraged to create solutions that solve world problems. So
yeah, that's a really interesting angle about your passion for entrepreneurialism. Yeah. You know, I think everybody's well aware of business and everyone talks about making money and, you know, that's normally the narrative. Mm. But you're talking about entrepreneurialism as a way of creating change.
Absolutely.
What sort of change? Tell us a bit more about that and the businesses that you work with.
So when I look at change, I mean, there's no shortage of problems in the world today. We all know that, right? And I think like a lot of the narrative these days is about there's this problem or there's X problem, but there's not a lot of discussion around, well, what could we actually do to solve these problems? And when I became an entrepreneur myself, I found that kind of being a management consultant and also being an entrepreneur, the pace at which an entrepreneur can effect change is so much quicker because, you know, we're kind of in a decision-making seat. We have a team around us and we can really enable that much quicker. So some of the work I've done, especially with some of my like really what I call fun clients, when I'm like, you're doing something really cool, is things like using technology to support parents who have autistic children. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're talking about, say, you know, a parent's had a child just diagnosed and they're not even familiar with what autism really involves or what it involves to take care of that child. But some of my clients or the clients I've worked with, we'll develop like online apps which actually educate the parents on how to change the lifestyle, the schooling, the food, like all of these pieces of information that would otherwise be inaccessible unless they went through the NHS. It's like, how can we use or leverage technology to enable solutions that actually support people in their day-to-day lives and really help them in that way? So those are just an illustration of the kind of clients. Yeah.
And are you working with a certain age group? Because I kind of feel, you know, to generalize, but I feel like millennials that are coming through are definitely looking at business in a different way and developing businesses from how can they affect a positive change on the world. Do you find you're working with more millennials, or is it across the board in terms of who you're working with?
Do you know, interestingly enough, it's not a lot of millennials. I mean, my ambition is to inspire many millennials, but a lot of the clients I've worked with are people who've probably been in their vocation or industry for a really long time. So they have this very deep set of expertise about what it really is required to elicit this sort of change. So those are the sort of people I've been working with, and that's quite fascinating for me because it means I get to take their expertise and then kind of siphon that over to, you know, these budding millennials about, look, this is what's really involved. Because it is kind of bringing two worlds together. Millennials are very tech savvy and kind of able to work at that level, but then they don't have that expertise. Exactly. So it's like, how can you bring those two together?
You could do loads in education around this. Yeah. Do you have many projects in education, for example?
Yeah.
Just the teacher in me is already thinking, I'm like, hundreds of different ideas, just don't know how to implement them. But you need the tech expertise to do that. So is that the perfect pairing for you, I suppose?
Yeah. And I also think, like, having been a consultant, like, you know, so I started off my career at Accenture, which is one of the biggest, you know, consultancies out there. Yeah. So being in that environment was very much about, I remember this really well. One of my career counselors said to me, he's like, Namisha, never ask me what you need to do. Like, if I tell you do this, you just need to ask me. Like, if I tell you to jump, you need to tell me, ask me, how high do I need to jump? And I remember him saying that. I was like, what? But that ethos shaped me because it meant that every time I was presented with a challenge, it wasn't about, oh my God, I don't know how to do it. It's like, I have to find an answer. Yeah. And that's kind of what you're expected, especially in the consulting world from your corporate clients. You can't go without a solution. So when you take that level of thinking or that kind of strategic way of looking at things and then apply that to these sort of settings, you find you're able to really solve things quicker. And I think that's what it is for me. It's about giving people the ability to strategically think about how they can realize their ideas as opposed to kind of following specific models or structures.
Because you've set up your own school, haven't you? The Legacy Business School.
Yes.
And what I found really interesting about that, and being an entrepreneur myself, is I've always thought that around business, there's not enough talk around your mindset, and you look at that, but also you look at spirituality
as
well.
That's what I'm really
interested in. Could you talk a little bit about the Legacy Business School and those three pillars that
So, I mean, kind of touching on what I've already spoke about, the Legacy Business School was founded on that principle that we want to, you know, we want to build the leaders of the future. We want to be we want to build the new Elon Musks, the Richard Bransons, the people who have all these genius ideas. And I remember personally on my entrepreneurial journey, I had all the skill set, but I didn't have the spiritual grit that you needed. You know, like when you get into being an entrepreneur, there's so much more you're exposed to in terms of your self-worth. You know, you doubt yourself, you question so many things. When you get knocked down, how do you pull yourself back up? And I think it's tougher for millennials in this day and age to start a business, or even if you're young, because you're criticized so much more, you're exposed so much more. It's so much about who is influential, who has the positioning. And I think when you lean into spiritual practices, they really help you ground those pieces.
Good point.
What's my self-worth? What am I here to do? why am I doing this? And how do I show up? Which is, because there's a lot in business around find your niche, figure out how you're different. And I swear that drives me crazy, because it's like when you say that to someone, you're almost asking them to forget about all the other things that they're very good at. You know, it's like niche down, pick one specific thing. But my principles are more around find a spiritual anchor so that you can leverage all the different things you're good at. And that all comes from knowing your self-worth, your value, and those things I learned.
And believing in something.
Yeah.
Because, you know, just thinking what you're saying, and we were talking about this before, about the online, you know, Instagram, Twitter, all of these things. And people, the millennials, believing that they have to be out there or they have to be shouting from the treetops about how successful they are.
Yeah.
And if you don't have that inner spirituality, that becomes your spiritual world, doesn't
it? Yeah. And I also think, like, something that's not talked a lot about in business is the fact that we're all humans running these businesses. You know, we're still emotional people. We have triggers, like things upset us. And at the end of the day, I think it's so important for business education to talk about those things, because I think that's what's going to help people survive in business.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. So where can people find your business school and find out more about you?
So you can search www.thelegacybusiness.school or you can search me, nimishabrombat.com, and yeah, everything is on there.
Sign up online.
Exactly.
And, that's amazing. Thank you so much for coming in and talking to us. I'm sure you've inspired some of our listeners into thinking more about their businesses. It's absolutely an amazing journey being an entrepreneur.
It is.
I can highly recommend it. Rollercoaster ride. You know, you have the dark days, but you have the great days.
Yes,
isn't that right?
Absolutely.
But the journey's definitely worth it.
Yeah.
Thank you so much
for coming in on the show. Thank you. I just wanted to leave one last thought to say, you know, for me, entrepreneurialism has been one of the greatest opportunities of self-expression.
Great. Thank you so much. 1, 2, 3, 4.
You've been listening to the Badass Women's Hour podcast. If you liked it, you know what you should do? Subscribe, then we'll be in your ears every single week. You could also rate and review us. A little 5 stars makes us happier than anything.
Or a lot of 5 stars.
Or a lot. Come talk to us at Badass Women's Hour HR. Tell us what you loved, and we'll see you next week.
Hey folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.